You're listening to Geizik Skinflint's First Christmas on Sun Sounds of Arizona, read by volunteer reader Jim Mitchell. Now, let's move on to Chapter 12, A Vision Mare. Geizik was thirsty. He shuffled into the bathroom for a glass of water. Standing at the sink, he glanced at himself in the mirror. This time, he saw the reflection of a tired, elderly-looking person, boasting a full head of uncombed gray hair, bushy gray eyebrows, deeply set, cold, blueberry-colored blue eyes, full cheeks, nearly wrinkle-free skin, with no deep smile lines, because he never smiled, and perfect teeth. He needed a shave, which he'd cure when he'd readied himself for the day. After taking a few gulps from the glass, he set it down, placing his hands firmly on the edge of the sink. He leaned forward, closer to the mirror. With unblinking, wide-open eyes, he intensely stared at his reflection in the mirror. He saw both eyelids quickly blink several times, then close. Yet he had not blinked his eyes. But this image in the mirror reflected that he had. Mesmerized by what he just witnessed, Geizik started feeling odd vibrations trickling through his body. Then he saw in the mirror both eyelids open slowly. Shockingly, both eyes were missing. Where eyes should be, only large, deep black holes were visible. The beating pace of Geizik's heart increased as he watched his eyelids slowly close, covering the dark eyeless cavities. Instantly, Geizik shut his eyes for a moment, hoping the mirror would again visually echo to correct his image. He very slowly opened his eyes. His eyes were still missing. Large, dark cavities in the mirror were ogling back at him. Then gently the lids, like a curtain of a theater, dropped down. After a few moments, he saw his eyelids open again. Geizik closed his eyes. Then, hoping to clear his head, he shook it several times. Again, his eyelids opened. His eyes in the mirror were still missing, and instead, the large dark spaces had been replaced with characterized illustrations of Geizik in a slideshow, beginning with one illustration about Geizik Skinflint, following another. Inside a church, the altar, crosses, everything were made of money. Geizik was seen kneeling while praying to an altar of money for more money. Money is Geizik Skinflint's god. Minimum wages going up reads the headlines of a newspaper lying in Geizik's desk. Pounding with his fist on the desk, tears running down his cheeks, he's yelling, "Mine! Nine! No! No! Not again!" On a Beaverville sidewalk, Geizik is passing dozens of people. They all are looking away from him, and everyone has a wooden goods clothespin pinching their noses. Skinflint is standing in front of a bank building with a wheelbarrow overflowing with money. The bank building's walls are bulging out. Money is falling from the windows and through the open front door. The banker is saying, "I'm sorry, Mr. Skinflint, but we just don't have any more room in the bank for any more of your money." Geizik is standing outside of the front door of a church. Inside, at the altar, a young lady wearing a wedding costume is waiting for her father. Geizik is blocking the entrance, preventing her father from going inside. He's also pointing his finger in the face of the bride's father, firmly informing him, "If being at your daughter's wedding this morning is more important than your job, then I suggest you find a different place to work." In the background, a large wall calendar shows December 25th, Christmas Day. A large X is marked over that day. Employees are leaving the wooden goods shop. The date is December 24th. Skinflint is washing from his second-floor office through a large window. He's smiling. Two workers see Skinflint watching him. One says, "Look at old sourpuss Scrooge is smiling. I've never seen him do that before." The other worker remarks, "Yeah, He's smiling because he doesn't have to pay us for tomorrow, Christmas Day. Four words boldly appear on a classroom blackboard. Parsimonious, friendless, intimidating, curmudgeon. A young student, Geisek, is standing listening to his teacher as she points toward the blackboard while she emphasizes, "Geisek, you must understand what those words mean. Then, in your future, whenever meeting someone, you will know those four words will reflect how others see and feel about you, Geisek Skinflint." In the same classroom setting, different words are boldly printed in the blackboard, magnanimous, and below that, the word generous, kindly, charitable, benevolent, unselfish, considerate. The teacher says, "Geisek, in your future, whenever you're magnanimous, you'll be recognized as being a person like one of the six complimentary words. After that, you'll receive a sign from above complimenting you and informing you that your favorable act of magnanimous has been noted." Eyelids in the mirror on Geisek's face closed. The slideshow of unflattering characterizations was over. Except the final one puzzled him. What kind of a sign was that going to be, and how would he receive it from above? But the message, full impact, only further frustrated Geisek. He just adored a visionary. A haunting, ugly reflection of seeing himself this time in a mirror as others had viewed him for many years. What's happening to me? First those three nightmares, and now this vision mirror. As Geisek re-entered the bedroom, he recalled earlier hearing about snow in the forecast. Now, peering out his bedroom window facing Golden Knob Drive, he was amused, mystified, and troubled by the view capturing his attention. Geisek was witnessing a weather oddity. The sky was dark and crystal clear. A bright moon was shining, and yet snow was deeply accumulating. From the clear sky, a brightness emanating from the moonlight was generously casting its rays upon each falling snowflake. Like pseudo-alchemy, each beautiful snowflake seemed to be transformed to appear as a small, precious, glittering diamond as they gradually collected throughout the surrounding neighborhood. Not a single snowflake was to be found falling upon the house void of all colorful Christmas lights or decorations. The only snowless house was dark, gloomy, and lonely, the house of the rogue, Geisek Skinflint. While watching those bright snowflakes falling from above, Geisek had a strong realization that he was receiving another mysterious message. First there were the three nightmares, then a vision mare, the red rose, and now this subliminal alert that those snowflakes, which were falling heavily up and down the street, except on Geisek Skinflint's house and its surrounding land. Geisek pondered a serious concern. Is it possible someone from way up above had noticed someone way down below with a seriously broken attitude problem about Christmas? So all those snowflakes carried, in their usual pattern, a final and telling message to him. Suddenly, the message began resonating. All five visions were collectively attempting to inform him of something needing fixing. At last, it was something obvious to Geisek. Those snowflakes had flipped on the switch in his mind, bringing forth bright moonlight, which guided him to see a latent issue deep within him needing repair. That moonlight was more helpful than any noonday sun from the past had ever been. Geisek began seriously questioning himself about the reason he had been being so mentally hostile towards the Christmas spirit. It had begun early. His broken attitude had been instigated by his parents. Since he also never married or had a family, he never personally felt the love or spirit a family creates at Christmas. Geisek said to himself, "I wonder how many here in Beaverville feel as I do about Christmas. Perhaps I'm the only one." I certainly know I'm the only one on Golden Knob Drive. Glancing at my dark, gloomy house, no Christmas lights, no decorations, no snow, nothing. That's the visual evidence which must confirm me as being the oddball in this neighborhood when it's about participating in the spirit of Christmas. Geysik was beginning to rationalize. He'd received a message from those sparkling snowflakes and those other haunting occurrences. He was entering the early stages of fixing his long-time deranged attitude. He realized that during his loveless lifetime, he'd been missing what life is truly about. He was puzzled by the selective snow falling. Opening the bedroom window, he leaned outside. The black void in the neighborhood he predicted, without Christmas lights decorating the house, was now embarrassingly obvious to Geysik. Well, maybe tomorrow it'll become a little more neighborhood-friendly and have some Christmas lights hung. And then he added, not much I can do about not having any snow around. He extended his hand out as if expecting to feel falling snow. Instead, only a large, single snowflake fell upon the palm of his hand. From the bright moonlight, he gazed upon a perfectly shaped snowflake appearing as an angel. Geysik was holding in the palm of his hand a rare snowflake, a bright, glowing snowflake angel, said aloud, I'm immediately, tonight, going to begin changing my self-centered mindset about the most worldwide celebration of all occasions, Christmas, and then I'll fix being known for having such a sour attitude about everything else, and right now, I'm going to start. I should have possessed these feelings a long time ago. Before tonight, I never really understood myself and didn't care. Everything was going simply great for me. My account balance at the bank never stopped blooming. Having money and wealth are the rewards of a successful entrepreneur. However, being a magnanimous entrepreneur is also a reward for being successful. Geysik, in his fast-thinking mind, was sorting out several issues in need of immediate attention repair. First the IRS letter, then the employees about getting paid for Christmas, and he figured out a way to continue the future of wooden goods. As Geysik prepared to close the window, he was surprised and overwhelmed by a joyful sight. His expressionless face broke into a bright smile, and his blue eyes widened. At Geysik Skinflint's Knob Drive home. It was now heavily snowing, as it had been throughout the entire neighborhood. Chapter 13, A Snowflake Angel. First, the IRS letter. It occurred to Geysik that the IRS had actually given him the answer to a couple of methods to fix their investigation. Within the past few minutes, an inspiration had come to him concerning a solution on how to keep those scoundrels away once and for all. First, he would have his CPA make the best settlement possible. He would accept that the IRS can legally steal his money and spend all of it over the country on some wild, no-good pork barrel scheme, which he'd have no power to say anything about, and how they'd waste his money. In the future, however, he decided that he was not going to let the IRS steal any more of his money. He thought, I have a very profitable business. I've always worked hard at keeping my costs exceptionally low, profits extremely high. Now, I've learned my profits are too good. So, I'll solve that so-called excessive retained earnings issue simply by increasing a few of my costs. I'll begin providing the workers paid holidays, wage reviews, and vacation pay, things they call workers' benefits, for a start. At least that will keep the money here in Beaverville, and the company will still be profitable. Those IRS bandits can go elsewhere. Wooden goods workers will be happy, local merchants will be happy, and I'll also feel happy for once about doing something for others at last. Skinflint's breathing excitedly increased with each fresh idea he generated as the new wooden goods fix-it man. Finally, Geizik was certain he was on the right track. Now, to quickly move forward with a good, workable plan for everyone. As Geizik blinked his eyes, there suddenly appeared, for a fraction of a moment, a large, bright snowflake angel on the back of his closed eyelids. Geizik was now certain he understood. Whenever he'd done something pleasing, the snowflake angel appeared as a sign, informing him it was also something heartwarming and admiring. With his new fresh attitude, Skinflint couldn't wait to hit the start button. The alarm clock indicated the time was 2:11. He then reached for the bedside telephone and dialed a number. After ringing several times, a sleepy male voice answered. "Yes? Hello? Who's calling?" "Roland, this is Geizik." "Who? Did you say Geizik? Is that you in this time of the morning? Are you all right?" Roland slowly questioned. During all the years he'd worked for Geizik, this was the first time he'd ever called him at home, any time of the day or night. "Yes, this is Geizik, Roland. I've come up with a solution to deal with the IRS and a couple of other wooden goods issues. I have something in mind. We must talk. Right now. Tonight." "Over the phone?" "No, I'd prefer to come over to your house and discuss it right now. Is that all right?" "My home? Now?" "Yes, and by the way, do you have your Christmas tree up and decorated yet?"
"My tree up?"
Yeah, we have it up, Geizik." "Did you say Christmas tree? Is that what you asked?" "Very good. I'd like to borrow it for a short time tomorrow. Sorry, I mean today. Will that be all right? You'll understand better when I see you shortly."
"Borrow our Christmas tree? Okay, I guess.
No more talking on the phone. I want to discuss this with you, what we're going to be doing, and I'll be at your place in half an hour. By the way, Roland, I'd like to have Beth also hear what we're discussing."
"Geizik, it's 2:30 in the morning. It's a little early for Beth."
"Just so you're prepared, she'll be in her robe and have curlers in her hair, and she'll probably still be a little sleepy, but we'll have coffee brewing."
"Great, Roland. I'm sorry about this midnight type of call, but time is of the essence, and we need to discuss and get a lot of ducks in a row before the workers start showing up in the morning, and I think I'm already smelling Beth's coffee brewing. See you shortly."
Geizik, during the telephone conversation, was sitting on the edge of his bed. As he traced his bizarre experiences during the past several hours, Geizik was sensing a grateful sensation from the retraction of something old for something new and fresh. And the something was long past due at the need to be fixed. Suddenly, Geizik was feeling young, younger than if he'd just awakened and stepped out of his baby crib and been born again into a new world. He was ready to restart his journey with a new golden fresh heart. A new heart with room for a long-time missing love. For the first time in all his 70 years, he felt ready and eager to start over. An image of a perfect Christmas snowflake from that unforgettable night had become forever embedded in Geizik's optical memory bank. So, from time henceforth, whenever Geizik generously touched someone, and it would be frequently, when he blinked, his eyes on the dark back side of the eyelid would appear for just a split second, an image of the bright, sparkling Christmas snowflake angel. That symbol of the snowflake angel was the image of thankful appreciation and gratitude to Geizik Skinflint, a new, very magnanimous Geizik Skinflint in Beaverville. Chapter 14. Merry Christmas! It was early Tuesday, December 24th, and this morning the sky over Beaville was clear, and the sun was just beginning to shine upon the freshly fallen snow. Between that sunrise and its sunset that Christmas Eve, it would also shine charitably upon all wooden good workers. During the past hour, Ed Jones had been happy and smiling as he plowed the snow from the wooden goods parking lot. He was the company's longtime and trusted maintenance man.
This morning, Geitzik had trusted him to keep a secret for the next couple of hours. Geitzik had given Ed $20 with instructions to purchase outdoor Christmas lights at Gray's Hardware. Then Ed was told to place a few on Geitzik's property at Henry Street and the balance of the Christmas lights on his home on Golden Knob Drive. Geitzik, at the shop worker's entrance, warmly greeted the first worker arriving and said, "Harold, good morning and Merry Christmas. First thing this morning, we'll all be meeting in the break room. Go directly there." Harold was shocked. He'd worked for Geitzik for over 15 years and was the first time he'd ever met him or any other shop worker at the entrance. Standing alongside Geitzik was Roland and his wife Beth. They also were greeting the arriving workers by their first names and with bright welcoming smiles and a sincere Merry Christmas. Everyone assembled in the workers' break area were surprised and nearly speechless at what greeted them. A perfectly shaped spruce tree was decorated with Christmas lights, ornaments, tinsel, and a large lighted angel at the top. It was the tree provided at the very last minute from the Berger household. It was also the first time any sign of Christmas spirit had ever been displayed at the Wooden Goods facility. Ed Jones, later that morning, would return the Christmas tree back to the Berger's household. It was a few minutes before the regular starting time of 8 o'clock. "Mr. Dilly, is everyone clocked in and present?" Geitzik asked. Geitzik was standing in front of the assembled group while Roland, his wife Beth, Dilly, and Pennyworth were seated near him. Miss Lemon was in the office at her desk to answer phone calls. Geitzik had informed her earlier of what we'd be discussing and was expecting an especially important call from Hank Barlow, his attorney. His instructions were when and if called back, she would interrupt him at once. "Yes, sir. Everyone has clocked in and's here now." The seats in the break room had gradually filled with workers. Most were shrugging their shoulders, shaking their heads, or whispering to each other in bewilderment at what mystery this was all about. And someone stood and yelled, "Merry Christmas!" A couple others repeated, "Merry Christmas!" Soon everyone was yelling, "Merry Christmas, Mr. Skinflint!" "Well, I'll say it again, Merry Christmas to everyone," Geitzik, smiling, waved his hands for everyone to be seated. Geitzik paused briefly. He looked at everyone staring at him. Yes, he did know their names and the names of their families. Everyone was a human being working for him to provide for their families and loved ones in one way or another. Each day when he inspected through the shop and saw them working at the machines, to him they had only been another asset, just a person attached to a machine. Two assets, man and machine, working together to make him more money. How could he been so callous and heartless of people he blindly depended on and who were so loyal to him? This morning, Geitzik Skinflint saw those same people sitting in front of him differently from yesterday. Those were all people with hearts of love, but they lacked any good feelings of any love for working for him because of his style of management. The name Skinflint had a sour image throughout Beaverville. People working there were known as slaving at Skinflint's Penny Arcade, a sweatshop in a cold working environment. And only Skinflint was the sole reason for such a lasting rotten image. Last night he'd been wide awakened to something broken, which he needed to fix, thanks to a large, bright snowflake angel. And that was what Geitzik was about to do. "First, I want to admit, as I'm sure you're all well aware, that at times my attitude has been like the weather outside, cold. I humbly confess, at times I wasn't just cold, I was bitterly cold about everything. I believed it was necessary then, so that in the future we'd be able to achieve this point in time. I promise you that those heartless days are now forever going to be in the past. I'm sorry should any of my past comments or methods have appeared heavy-handed, but as of today, December 24th, I'm going to leave my cold weather outside forever. Now, I want to take this opportunity to inform you of some changes I'm planning for Wooden Goods, including everyone here, beginning now, December 24th, Christmas Eve. The break room was silent and the tension was high. Some of you may have questions. Hopefully, I'll be able to answer them with my announcement. Otherwise, I want you to feel free to ask me for answers to your questions at the end of this meeting. Now, in the interest of longevity for the company and for your positions, as of this morning, I've named Roland Berger president. In addition to that promotion of Roland, I've already started the legal documents to sell my Goodenwood stock to Roland and Beth. The time to complete that transaction will be swift. I've placed a cap on the amount of legal fees I pay. There will only be so much money available for the attorney to get paid for tap dancing about dotting T's and crossing I's. So they'll get it wrapped up very rapidly. Now, as we all know, Roland started here while in high school and has excelled throughout his time. He's done a great job, like all of you have. I'll admit, I've managed the company far too long. It's an incredibly old-fashioned style. Roland has youthful energy, plus he possesses the creative vision and ability to move the company forward in a much-needed updated style of management. Roland is ready to own the keys to the company, and under his guidance, will expand it to become the best place to work in the area. We want you to feel proud of working here, and when saying, "I work at Wooden Goods." As Roland stood to acknowledge Geisek's announcement, the room broke out into whistling and cheers. Geisek continued, "I'll still be here part-time in my office during that transition. Roland's desk will also be moved into my office, and Roland will continue as sales manager until that position is filled." Geisek was thinking it had only been a few hours ago in Roland's kitchen that they'd shaken hands on an agreement to sell and buy Wooden Goods Company stock. He'd set a fair price. However, he realized Roland didn't possess or have access to the funds to readily purchase the stock, as well as retain the extra funds necessary to implement the needed changes in the business. First, it was necessary to get the IRS issue resolved. That will require using some of the bonds, but that would leave still enough for other uses. Geisek would sell his stock to Roland with a promissory note. Then Roland would transfer to Geisek enough bonds to pay off the note. Roland would then name Geisek chairman as a long-term consulting agreement at his present salary. Then Roland and Beth would own the company free of any debt. The final details of the agreement would be worked out by the accountant and the attorneys. "Mr. Skinflint, Mr. Skinflint," Stan Weber was standing, calling for attention. Stan oversaw quality control and shipping. He said, "I have a question. I'm interested in sales. What should I do?" "Stan, why?" And then Geisek hesitated in answering Stan's question. Glancing towards Roland, Geisek said, "Stan, after we're finished here, meet with Roland." Geisek took a deep breath and continued, "In addition to reflect the picture of change here and emphasize the company's location, we're changing the name from J. Skinflint Wooden Goods to Beaverville Wooden Goods, Incorporated, immediately." "Further," Geisek paused and smiled when continuing, "beginning tomorrow, Christmas Day and New Year's Day will become paid holidays for all Wooden Goods workers." Roland tugged on Geisek's sleeve to whisper in his ear, "But you've always emphatically said you'd never pay people not to work." Geisek winked and then softly replied, "Roland, you're close. I said I've never, never pay people not to work. Well, I misspoke. I'd say this is the right time for fixing that broken issue and eating my words." Like a volcano erupting with cheers, the room instantly filled with everyone shouting and yelling, "Merry Christmas!" Many were also yelling, "Thank you, thank you!" Most began shedding tears of joy. They also reached out to shake hands and placed their arms around Geizik, expressing their sincere feelings of thanks. The loud variety of sounds of appreciation continued for several minutes. You're listening to Geizik Skinflint's First Christmas by Kurt A. Paré. Read by your volunteer reader, Jim Mitchell, on Sun Sounds of Arizona. And now back to the ending of our story. And then Geizik continued. When you leave at noon today, a truck will be here from Bert's IGA. On that truck will be a fresh turkey for each of you to enjoy during a special holiday meal. You did hear me correctly. I did say at noon today, Christmas Eve, we'll be closing for the Christmas holiday. Also, Roland and Beth will be handing each of you an envelope with some cash in it to help your little ones to enjoy Santa Claus' wishes. Geizik smiled and held up an envelope. Each of the envelopes contained a crisp new $10 bill. In a snap back in memory, Geizik, when young, had never heard his parents mention the name of Santa Claus. Santa never had his address. Skinflint, as a youngster, never knew the excitement and joy of opening a Christmas present from Santa Claus or anyone. I know you're all anxious to get back to your workstations, so I'll rush my comments along. Some loud chuckles and laughter were heard. As the break room again became quiet, Geizik said, "For several years, there's been talk in Beaverville about having a child daycare and a boys and girls recreation center. Now, let's see what we can do to make that happen. Next week, I'm going to meet with Mayor Geyer to offer our support." Ms. Lemon interrupted Geizik, handing him a note. It read, "Mr. Barlow is on hold." Roland whispered into Geizik's ear, "Quickly, Geizik, before you leave, we'd love to have you over for our Christmas Day dinner." Geizik was caught by surprise and then answered, "I'd feel privileged to be invited. Yes, I'll be happy to join your family on Christmas Day." That would be the first time in Geizik's life he'd ever enjoyed a Christmas Day meal in a happy family holiday time environment. He quickly decided he'd call Hans and have him close Der Stein for the first time on Christmas Day. He'd been invited to enjoy a Christmas meal at the Burger's home. Taking a deep breath, Geizik announced, "I have an important phone call I have to take. Roland, will you kindly wrap up here for me? I'll plan to see you all again before noon. Merry Christmas." From one, then three, and four, and soon everyone in the break room was singing, "For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, Mr. Skinflint, which no one can deny. Merry Christmas, Mr. Skinflint." Geizik hurriedly left the break room, heading to his office. He waved his hand, acknowledging his expression of thanks. He just felt the mysterious chemical formula of love blended with over 40 warm hearts, which had tenderly touched his own heart. It was a fresh, new sensation. He also didn't want them to see him wiping tears from his cheeks. Rushing up the stairs to the second floor, Geizik was breathless when he entered his office. He called his attorney, Hank Barlow, early that morning, alerting him to the basic details on the plans for the new wooden goods company. He'd also asked Hank to do some quick research on a different subject of immediate importance. In between rapid pauses of attempting to catch his breath, Geizik, picking up the telephone, muttered, "Hank, Geizik here. How's it going?" "Good, Geizik. It took a little doing. You know, most people are closed on Christmas Eve day, but I was able to dig out what you wanted even today. This number should be what you want. Get your bill off right away, and I'll have Pennyworth get it paid yet this year. Hank, fast service, deserve fast payment." "Well, Geizik, I'll tell you what. For that information, simply call my fee a Christmas present. Talk to you soon. Merry Christmas." "Thank you so much for your Christmas present. Merry Christmas to you as well, Hank." "Geizik, did you just say Merry Christmas?" "Of course, Hank. Why not?" The phone call had ended. Sitting back in his large chair, Geizik had an unrecognizable yet welcoming warm sensation. Throughout his nearly 70 years, that was the first Christmas present he'd ever received. It truly feels darn good, after all, Geysek thought to himself. Then Geysek looked at the phone number Hank had given him. As he closed his eyes again on the back of his lids, a bright snowflake angel appeared. Geysek gleefully said to himself, I have the feeling I've received my first Christmas present. Thank goodness time never stops. If it did, I'd never be as old as I am now. Then I wouldn't be here today. I'd also be missing my first Christmas. My first Christmas. It sounds wonderful. Yes, Geysek, you've missed throughout your lifetime many joyful memories. Now those empty memory cells of missed Christmases past me begin filling from the remembrance of the joys of this Christmas. Your first true Christmas. No one should ever have a memory which is not overflowing from the joyful spirits of Christmas past, present, and the future. Suddenly, Geysek had a fresh inspiration. When Roland paid off his note, he'd have some extra money. He'd picked up his phone and called Mayor Ralph Geyer at his home. Ralph, this is Geysek. I have an idea, and you'll be the first person to hear about it. And I want your thoughts before going too far, Geysek said. All right. What's on your mind? How can I help you, Geysek? The mayor replied. Ralph, I feel Beaverville should be the brightest Christmas-decorated city in the county. No, the entire state of Wisconsin. Every highway entering Beaverville should have an arch with colorful lights wishing everyone entering Merry Christmas. Plus, we should have more lights and decorations throughout the entire town. The spirit of Christmas in Beaverville should be promoted to the ultimate. Now, Ralph, I know what you must be thinking. Geysek paused, then taking a deep breath, he continued, This will be a civic event. I'll establish a trust account for, let's say we'll call it the Beaverville Christmas Angel Trust. That will cover all the costs of Beaverville, including the extra for the electric bill for December. When we meet next week, I'll go over this with more detail, if you're interested. After a long silence, the mayor said, Geysek, I'm truly looking forward to meeting with you next week. You've just surprised me with that wonderful suggestion. Over the years I've known you, I've been unbelievably mistaken about how I felt about you. I've always taken you to be the most parsimonious man in the entire state. I was wrong about that. Now, I truly know deep down you're a very magnanimous man. After wishing each other Merry Christmas, the call ended. Then, blinking his eyes, Geysek momentarily saw a sign from the Snow Angel. Geysek was nervous as he dialed the number his lawyer had provided. He also was reasoning he'd rather have memories from his future, including the memory of a mysteriously disappearing red rose. Instead of having more hideous dreams like those from his selfish and ugly past. After the phone had rung five times, Geysek decided he was just about ready to give up. Then, on the sixth ring, a soft female voice, breathless from rushing to the phone, answered, Hello, and Merry Christmas. This is Professor Mariana Peterman speaking. Who's calling? The end. Geysek Skinflint's First Christmas by Kurt A. Parry. Kurt Parry was made and born in the USA in 1934 in Peshtigo, Wisconsin. His lifetime story is revealed in Alluring Memories, his autobiography. He resides in Fountain Hills, Arizona. That concludes our story. Thank you for listening. I'm Jim Mitchell, your volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona.